It's the same old game of words.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
So serious.
I am Iron Man.
This is a tasty burger.
Welcome to the In Session Film Podcast.
Welcome to this week's Extra Film segment for January 8th, 2015. And I'm JD Duran.
And I'm Brendan Cassidy.
Welcome to our very first Extra Film segment of 2015, everybody. We got no guests this week. It's just going to be Brendan and I holding down the fort, but we have a pretty fun show in store as we're going to be talking about Tim Burton's latest in Big Eyes, starring Amy Adams and Christoph Waltz. And in the second half of the show, we're going to talk about Mark Wahlberg's latest, The Gambler, which should be an interesting conversation based off of our previous conversations, Brendan. I'm kind of curious to see where this is going to go, because we've been agreeing a lot lately on the show. Foxcatcher, we sort of disagreed a little bit for the sake of it, I think, more than anything else.
I think we still have the same problems. So, if we agree on everything again, I'm going to get mad.
So we shall see how that goes. But before we get going into any of that, how's your week going so far, man?
Dude, I'm cold. It's a cold week. It's killing us. And yeah, geez, like, and the other thing is that I'm in my apartment right now, and for some reason I got to get this thing fixed. But for some reason, the window in my kitchen just always tends to channel this wind really badly.
Oh,
so
man.
It whistles. So you might pick up this whistling sound during this podcast right now.
Well, good for the heads up then.
Just don't think it's like some kind of monster or creature coming to haunt me or anything.
It's not
like
the Babadook coming after Brendan.
Oh, don't get me started on that. Anyway, how's your week going, man?
My week has been going fabulous. First of all, this is my first week back at work after being off for 2 weeks. So it's kind of nice to get into the routine of things, as much as I loved vacation. But at the same time, for those of you that know me, some pretty exciting stuff happening this week. One, I finally got off Sprint. I can't stand Sprint. Terrible, especially in Kentucky where I live. So I got AT&T. I got a new phone. I got the new iPhone 6, which is pretty exciting. I just got back not that long ago from seeing Inherent Vice, which was my number one most anticipated film going into the fall and winter season in 2014. So I just got off of that, and I gotta tell you, man, it's just been an awesome week so far. Amazing.
Way to rub it in.
I know.
It hasn't been a bad week or anything like that. I mean, because I'm like with you. I'm getting back in the swing of things with work and stuff like that. It's just been cold, man.
It's been cold. I'll say that. I guess growing up in Michigan, I'm kind of used to this a little bit. I've played hockey in 0 degree weather before, so.
So am I, but it's colder here than it is in Pennsylvania right now.
that's crazy.
This is Tennessee, man. No, this is Tennessee. I'm in Tennessee right now. It's going to be cold.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. Real quick, before we get into it, a couple things that I want to tease and promote real fast. One, of course, this weekend, episode 99 is our In Session Film Awards. You definitely want to go and check that out. We have a preview up on the website if you want to go and check that out. And with the preview, I basically listed all the categories that Brendan and I are going to talk about. Obviously, we're also going to be doing our top 10 of 2014. And you'll see in that post, I have a link that has a download to a sheet that you can download, and you can fill it out yourself and kind of participate with us and kind of compare it to Brendan and I and Matt's picks when we do the show this weekend. So you can kind of play along with us. So all those details are up on the site, insessionfilm.com. Definitely go and check that out. It's just going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait for our award show this weekend.
I'm in the exact same boat. And I will say that if anyone out there does that ballot and your picks are very close to mine or the closest to mine, you'll win a prize.
Okay. I did not know that. So Brendan's throwing out prizes left and right.
Maybe. It could just be me blowing you a kiss.
But. It could be, yeah. So definitely participate with us. It's going to be a lot of fun. And the last thing I want to tease before we get into it is, obviously, after episode 99 is 100. So our 100th episode is coming up very, very soon. And we are going to have a little bit of a surprise. We're going to have some fun special guests come on that show. And it's going to be something you definitely want to tune in for. So make sure you pay attention to that, too, in the coming weeks. So I'm really excited for these next couple weeks on the main show. It's going to be really good. And, of course, on next week's Extra Film, because we're doing the award show this weekend, we're going to be discussing Inherent Vice and Selma on next week's Extra Films. So, man, these next three or four shows is going to be chaos. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be good stuff.
Yeah, good. And we're missing all the great stuff that comes in the first week of January.
Exactly. So we'll catch up at some point. But anyway.
No, we won't. That was sarcasm, man. Come on.
Well.
I'm not seeing the Woman in Black.
No, me either. Yeah, no, me either. There's some coming out in January that I'm looking forward to, though. But anyway, we'll discuss all that on a later show. Right now, we got Big Eyes and The Gambler to talk about, so let's get into it.
And here we go.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast Extra Film segment. Brendan, it's expressionism. I thought that you would recognize it.
No, JD, it's not art. This is just a podcast. It's just you spatting off bullshit.
Why are their eyes so big? Like big stale jelly beans.
It's expressionism. Surely you recognize it. So what do you say?
I say no, it's not art.
It's not art.
It's like the back of a magazine, you know, draw the turtle, send in a nickel, win the big contest.
How dare you? Lots of people will like this.
Well, nobody who's walked through the doors of this gallery. Now, please, clear out the clutter before the taste police arrive.
All right, Big Eyes is directed by the one and only Tim Burton and stars Amy Adams, Christoph Waltz, and a few other people here and there. I'll toss it to you first. Brendan, did Big Eyes work for you?
Well, first off, I'm mad, okay?
Okay.
I'm angry.
Yeah.
Because I wanna let everyone out there know. Actually, I wanna let the women out there know. Any women that are listening to this podcast, or just women out there in general, if there's one movie you need to see out there about women empowerment, trust me, it's not The Other Woman. Trust me.
Exactly.
It is not the other woman.
You're so right, Brendan. This is ridiculous.
The answer to that is Big Eyes. Big Eyes is yes. A movie you need to see that accurately portrays women empowerment in a way that is subtle but works perfectly, mainly because Amy Adams is just awesome. But, you know, onto the overall movie here, I think this is one of the most underrated movies of the year. This is where I like Tim Burton because I'm not a huge Tim Burton fan. I've been very hit or miss with a lot of his work. In fact,
You mean you don't like his crap with Johnny Depp?
Yeah. I mean, I tend to not like the final product. I like Sweeney Todd. I did like Sweeney Todd. But with Big Eyes, this is what I like about movies like Ed Wood and even Big Fish. I like the subtlety and how he lets the whimsical characters help bring the sense of whimsical, like bring that sense of whimsy, I guess, to the tone of the movie. And it makes it work and it balances it nicely. And I think here that works very well. I like the tone of this movie. I don't think it's perfect, obviously. I do think that there are some pacing issues, especially in the first third of the movie.
Rather. Sure. Yeah.
I also think the final act of this movie, there's a scene that there are some things that happen in the courtroom that lead to the film's climax. I think that is way too over the top and a bit mishandled. But having said that, everything that leads up to that point and everything in the middle is quite fascinating and quite great. I think Amy Adams is quite spectacular in this movie. Christoph Waltz, I think, has really proven some different notes here that I haven't seen from him before. There's a scene that we'll talk about that involves him lighting some matches. I'll leave it at that, but I think it's one of the best scenes of his entire career. So yeah, everything that goes on in the middle of this movie, I think, does a great job representing women empowerment, but also the ideal about art versus money, or that fine line between wanting to do something because you're passionate about it versus only doing it because, or lying about it, so to speak, so you can just get the wealth and fame and fortune and glory that comes with it. And I think that fine line is very well justified. I think it is. I mean, it is handled in a way that is kind of obvious. It's not very subtle, but the movie's not meant to be subtle. So I could respect that about it. But yeah, I think this is one of the more underrated films of the year.
Well, God, Brendan, one of these days, it's going to happen. But for this review, I 1,000% agree. This is such an underrated film. I had such a good time. I had low expectations because, like you, I haven't been a huge fan of his other work, especially with Johnny Depp. I haven't seen a good film from him in over a decade for me. And I apologize if I was a little offensive before, because I know some people do like his stuff with Depp or whatever. And that's fine. If you like those films, that's perfectly fine. It's certainly not my cup of tea, and I didn't like it at all. So I had very low expectations. And the trailer for this, while it was intriguing, it didn't sell me 100%. So going into it, I was kind of intrigued because of the cast, but I wasn't exactly sure. So coming out of it, I was very surprised, like you. I think it's a really good film and has a lot to say. At the same time, your criticisms of the film are exact my criticisms of what I had written down. I mean,
it's always the biopics too, man.
I know. I it's crazy. Yeah, I don't know. But what you spouted off as far as the pacing of the film at the beginning is exactly what I'd written down. I kind of talked about this on my Letterboxd review too. And the courtroom scene in the third act, I completely agree. It kind of felt like to me that on the podcast, we've talked about how directors need to surround themselves with no people, right? Like, no, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. You know, that's probably not a good idea. And I feel like for this, Tim Burton had those people around him. Like, no, that's too Tim Burton. You probably shouldn't do that. Let's go this route. And it worked through most of the film. And then he got to the courtroom scene and he went to his no people and he's like, please, please let me do my thing here. And they're like, whatever, we'll give him one scene. And so then he becomes Tim Burton at that point.
Yeah,
because I agree that it is very mishandled and it almost takes you out of the film. It's so over the top and crazy.
It's practically slapstick. It's cartoonish.
Absolutely. Yeah. Despite a few issues that I had with the film that we've been talking about, I completely agree with you that this film has a lot of great things to say about art, our emotional connection to it, how money and celebrity status can kind of come along with that as well. I love what you're talking about as far as women empowerment, because the biggest thing about this film that really works for me, and we'll definitely get to the art piece of it, is the performances carry this, because Christoph Waltz is amazing. I completely agree that he brings something new to the table that we haven't seen before. And while he's going to seem a little bit over the top to a lot of people, I think his eccentric behavior is pivotal to why the character works and why his plan was effective in the story. And when you juxtapose that with Amy Adams' character, who was a lot more weak and she was a lot more shy, really simply to put it, I just wanted to punch Christoph Waltz in the face. Like, that's really how fantastic he was in this film. I just hated his character. He was amazing. And Amy Adams, her character is just as pivotal because she's the heart of the film. I mean, it's a performance that no one is really talking about, but she really resonated for me. I mean, her torture through this film is hard to swallow at times, but it's very heartfelt. I mean, she really carries that in such a tender and sweet way, and you really felt for her character. I thought she was amazing. The performances were just through the roof. I loved it.
I completely agree. And I think what I said to you was, you said you wanted to punch Christoph Waltz in the face. I wanted to stab him with his paintbrush.
Exactly.
But for those who don't really know the true story here, but you know, okay, so it begins with Amy Adams' character, Margaret, before she became Margaret Keane. I forget her maiden or her name at that point, but she's basically leaving her husband, her current husband at the time, who we never even meet in the movie. So it does kind of feel like it's very quick, and that's where some of the pacing issues I agree. Have with it.
It was very fast. I mean, their connection like came out of nowhere. I mean, it happened in like 30 seconds.
It really did. Having said that, though, it does help set up the character of who she is. That she is kind of weak.
Yeah.
So, So it does. I mean, we could have definitely gotten a little bit more of that, but then there also is kind of coupled with this voiceover narration of the Danny Houston character
And there's that scene where Amy Adams is at like at lunch or something. She's at this restaurant with Kristen Ritter's character, and even Ritter's character says something to it. She's like, "Isn't this moving a little fast?" As if Tim Burton knew that the pacing was going to be kind of quick, so they kind of humorously touched on it. It's like they knew that it was happening, but it was a little disjointed though at the same time.
Yeah, kind of like they're like unintentionally breaking their own fourth wall about it. They're addressing, they're addressing their own movie about it. But yeah, because it really is kind of fast paced, at least in the first third of the film, until they really start to establish the relationship between Walter Keane and then Margaret Keane after they instantly get married. And it's kind of a funny marriage proposal. I'll give it I do think regardless of the pacing, though, it does do a good job setting up the weakness of Margaret's character. And I think Amy Adams does a very good job playing that in a very innocent way that you really kind of start sympathizing with her almost instantly. Like I was saying, I mean, there not only are there some pacing issues, but there are some character issues in the first third as well, because there it's coupled with this voiceover narration by the Danny Houston character, who's essentially, it's like he's kind of talking. He's a reporter who only reports on celebrities, and I forget his character's name. I mean, he's a real guy. It's a biopic. They're all real people in this movie. But I do think that the limited amount of stuff that his character was given to do, it made it feel like that the voiceover narration was almost unnecessary.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And that was the other issue I guess I have with the movie, was that there are a lot of great supporting roles in this movie that weren't quite given their due. Jason Schwartzman is a scene stealer in that one scene we used to set up the clip, but that's really all he's in the movie, despite a few other quick appearances.
He just shows up a few times here and there, but that's nothing really to do,
Right, but that did add to some of the pacing issues that I felt like this is another example of a movie that I think could have been longer, and I think it could have been justified by a longer length to kind of take the time to really expand on those aspects of it. But having said that, you know, the heart of the story, as you mentioned, is Amy Adams and her relationship and soon-to-be estranged relationship with Walter Keane, played by Christoph Waltz, and that really helps define the movie. And this guy – I mean, you talked about the juxtaposition here between the two of them. His sudden change in character arc from what appears to be a really sweet guy to a lying sack of pus. I mean, it's so sudden, but somehow it works, and you hate him. You can't stand the guy.
Yeah, well, I think part of that, or a big part of that, is Waltz himself. I think he plays that character extremely well because you believe his eccentricness, you believe his charisma, and he really at the beginning seems innocent. He does carry that well. So when that turn happens, you're just invested in that character, and he plays it in such a way that it's just believable the whole time.
Right. That's what I completely agree with, that he handles it in such a way that it's over the top, but over the top for the right reasons.
Yeah.
It's not too over the top that it's distracting, or it's not over the top enough that it feels underwhelming.
Yeah.
He gets the balance just right. And that's where the middle ground of this movie really works, is that it's just not only just his performance, but the movie overall. It feels so well balanced at that point. And it really has a lot – it's alluding to the whole idea about women empowerment, but at the same time, it's a nice balance between the, you know, the themes about art and celebrity and wealth and that fine line between the two. And it balances everything quite well. It's a very well-rounded movie for the most part.
Yeah.
And I cannot express enough that I think this is a very underrated biopic from this year. I think there's a lot of, you know, a lot of more, I guess, awards conversation and hype around movies like Foxcatcher and The Theory of Everything, and even The Imitation Game, whereas I like two of those movies, or actually I like one of those movies, the other two not so much.
Sure.
But in many ways, I think Big Eyes is actually better than all of them. In many ways, I think there are some flaws there. It's not a perfect movie. It's not one of my favorite movies of the year, but I think it addresses certain themes in a very well-rounded way that I think a lot of those other films struggle with. I think this one had, I think maybe the themes here maybe weren't as worth telling as something like Foxcatcher, but I think it told them in a much better and clearer and balanced way.
Yeah, I agree with you in a lot of different ways. Going back to the turn of the Christoph Waltz character, I was kind of talking about how I was really drawing into the believability of that character, and I think something that helps with that is his character to me, if we're going to talk a little bit underneath the surface here a little bit, is he realized, I think, at about the midway point or somewhere in the second act that he could take advantage of the Amy Adams character. Like, he noticed those weaknesses. He realized that there was an opportunity there to make money and that she was going to do nothing about it. And he learned that. And the way Christoph Waltz plays that, it makes it very easy for you to buy into that turn. And I thought that was really great. And I think how Amy Adams plays into that is obviously a huge part of this movie and why it works. Because as we mentioned, she is the heart of the film. And I completely agree with you about buying into her sympathy. And I think something that's really ironic or unique or maybe purposeful about it is she sells it with her eyes. Like, her emotional distraught and her horrificness that she's going through, it's all sold in her face and sold in her eyes, which is obviously completely parallels a lot of the paintings that she has and probably why the real life person felt like she needed to paint those kinds of paintings, because she was emotionally connected in a way that you could feel through someone's eyes. And I think Amy Adams, I think, was very intentional about playing it that way, because I completely bought into that emotional distraught that she was feeling, especially with her facial expressions. And you're right that the film talks a lot about women empowerment and overcoming this abuse that she has been experiencing all these different years. And I think one thing about that that is really unique to me is that when you're talking about standing up for yourself, especially someone who is very shy and is very weak, and this can really go across whether you're a male or a female, it doesn't really matter, but it comes down to her realizing that and owning that. Because the one thing I loved about the courtroom scene, I don't want to get into too much of the context, but her character there realized her weakness and she owned it. And that's the reason she comes out on top in this story, is because she was able to kind of evaluate herself. She knew it. And that honesty ended up winning the day, which is why for me that this is such an incredible, amazing real life story of good beating evil that I just never heard of before. And I didn't expect it. I didn't know much about the story going in. And I love that about the film.
And it was so well earned by that point. That was the most redeeming factor of that courtroom scene, because we talked about it being very over the top. The transformation that her character goes through and how we're supposed to dramatically respond to it, it's very well earned. By that point, you just wanted to kind of like – it's like from a male standpoint, you want to go up and give her a high five. Like, thank God. Thank God for you. Yeah. Thank God for you. But it is fascinating that to know that this really happened. And from what I understand – it's actually told, and the facts are presented in a way that's actually pretty faithful to what really happened. At least from what I understand, it is. But it's so surprising to know that it did go around this way. And I didn't know much about the story going in, but I did know about her these paintings. And because for a while, I guess, like, they really used to be everywhere. But then I like how they started getting a bit more into the whole, like, I guess, like, product placement aspect of it. Sure. So then they actually started making most of their money off of it by selling posters and copies of them.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's so true. I remember myself when I was in college going to poster fairs that they had just to decorate our apartment and dorm rooms with. People went nuts for those things. But it's so true. They regardless, it's art. It means something to them. So it has that nice juxtaposition between money and art just from that symbol there. So, you know, the posters themselves are symbolic of that. And you also talk about Amy Adams' ability to act with her eyes, which is one of the hardest things, I think, for an actor or an actress to do. And she does it so well. And the eyes themselves are yet another symbol in this movie. And they talk a lot about how, you know, she mentions a lot that the eyes are the window to the soul. And, you know, that's been said before many times, and it's kind of a generic thing to say. But here they make it mean something, and I really appreciated that out of it. And, you know, her paintings.
She really believed it,
So the fact that she does act with her eyes just adds to the symbolism of that. And I thought it was really intelligently handled. It was the right way to go.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I love the way that she was able to kind of sell it and just really bring that symbolism to life. I thought was awesome. Going back to something that we sort of touched on earlier is, while the film talks a lot about women empowerment or just standing up for yourself in general, the film also talks a lot about art and how personal it is and how there's an emotional connection there, which I love that idea. I think it's why we do this podcast, obviously, because we love film. And as an art form, it is something that brings an emotional connection to me. And it's why I love talking about films in general and definitely films like this. And the film kind of talks about how stealing art is personal, how it can destroy someone, and we see how it's personal and how it destroys both of them. Even though only one of them is painting, it's very personal, though, to Christoph Waltz, too, because even though he's not the one painting, it's his name that's attached to him, and he's the one that's building this empire. He's the one that's out selling them something that the Amy Adams character just couldn't do, and she knew that, which is why she played along the whole time.
Right.
So they were both very passionate about it for different reasons, but it was both art to them. And in the end, we see how devastated the Amy Adams character is because it was art that was meaningful to her that was being stolen. And something that goes deep to your emotional core like that, when you're robbed of it, it just takes the wind out of you in so many different ways. And for her to put up with it as long as she did is crazy to me, just thinking about the real life story of it. And Amy Adams, as we talked about with her performance, she just sells that so well. It's incredible. So on top of some of these other themes that we've been talking about, I just love how it brings art into it and it makes it the emotional core of this film. It was amazing to me.
Yeah, I really love how they use art as a means to express that, and they really have a lot of respect to say about this art, just art in general, which I love. And it's not just about painting or anything like that. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm here doing this review right now too because I love film and I love talking about film. Even if it's a film that I don't like, I like expressing my dislike for it.
Exactly.
I mean, the only thing that would make it better is if I didn't have to pay to see a movie for it sometimes. But you're absolutely right. And I think it gets that, you know, it gets that balance just right. And a lot of credit, I think, also has to go to the not just the acting and the performances, but a lot of credit, I think, mostly has to go to the script here. I think it's a very well written script, and I think that they do a really good job. Or I forget the writer, I think Larry Alexander, or Scott Alexander, or something like that. And then they helped produce the film as well, so they obviously had a passion for telling this story. If they were willing to put the money up to have it made, that they wrote this project as well. It's a very well done script. Because I felt like that I really felt like it wasn't like something that was just written on paper and then a director made something out of it. I felt like the script was written with the knowledge of what themes that it needed to explore and where they wanted to take it. I felt like the script was a really good foundation to tell the story, and Tim Burton just continued to act on and made what I think was actually one of his better films here. Like I said, this is where I like Tim Burton. It's not my favorite Tim Burton movie, though. I mean, I mentioned we do have some minor issues with it, but I do think it's one of his more well-rounded films. I think it tells one of his most important stories, too. And I really thought it was just fascinating.
All right, Brennan, any other final thoughts? And what grade would you give Big Eyes?
Just two other or a few other things, rather. The cinematography is gorgeous. Bruno Del Bono, I think his name is. If you want to see some of his other work, he works a lot with Jean-Pierre Jeunet, who's done like Amelie and A Very Long Engagement, things like that. Beautiful film to look at. The score by Danny Elfman is one of his best, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It's great.
Yeah. So just get angry because I'm going to say everything you want to say. I know.
I know. I'm so angry at you. You're so right about this movie.
Bob Saget. But anyway, the last thing, as I was kind of talking about earlier, that as I mentioned, it's not quite my favorite Tim Burton film. In many ways, I still prefer Big Fish, Ed Wood. In fact, heck, I've always liked Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
Sure, you're not the only one. Yeah,
I love that movie, but I do think this is one of his better films. I think it's better than most of anything he's done with Johnny Depp. I like Sweeney Todd. I guess I kind of like Edward Scissorhands. I don't hate that movie as much, but I do think this is one of his better films. I would give this an A-. I think it's also one of the better biopics of the year. I do, like I said, I still had some problems with it, some pacing issues in the beginning. Courtroom scene over the top was too over the top, very poorly handled. But everything else in between that was spectacular.
No, I completely agree with you. I mean, I'm in your camp 100% on this. There was one line, though, that I wanted to bring up that I thought was pretty ironic, but I also think has a lot of significance to it at the same time. But there's a scene where the Christoph Waltz character is wanting to present his quote-unquote masterpiece to the world, if you will, and he's confronted with this critic who was not a fan of this quote-unquote masterpiece. And there's a line that he says to the Waltz character where he says, "Art should elevate, not pander to its audience," which I think is ironic in a lot of ways. If you look at Tim Burton's career over the last decade or so, I think it's pretty funny in a lot of different ways. But I also think that line is pretty significant in the sense that I kind of believe what he's saying, even though I'm okay with pandering to a degree. I think Marvel does it in a great way that's fun and entertaining. I don't think it's over the top with their pandering. So I'm okay with it, with depending on the genre or medium or whatever we're talking about. But in essence, I do agree that it should elevate and try not to pander in a way that is distracting or that feels like, I'm being lied to or whatever the case may be. But I thought was pretty interesting. I thought was really, really well handled. And I think what's also significant about that is that it takes Christoph Waltz's character to a really, really dark place that was pretty harrowing to watch when we see the culmination of it. And you were kind of touching on it with the way that he plays with matches, and he was scary in that scene. Like it's different than the way we've seen Christoph Waltz as a bad guy before, as a likable bad guy before. Like, he was really frightening, and I thought he really portrayed that in a great way.
Mm-hmm.
I also agree with you about Danny Elfman's score. I didn't notice it as much in the film, but I went back and listened to it afterwards, and it's really solid. Really good music. I really enjoyed listening to that. There's also some really good songs by Lana Del Rey. Also, that's part of the soundtrack that I really liked.
Very, very true, yeah.
But overall, I completely agree with you. I love what this film has to say about art, how personal it is, how it brings out this emotional connection that we have with it. And I also love how it talks about standing up for yourself and owning it. Own your mistakes. Own your weaknesses. I think the film does a great job of saying that. That is such a pivotal thing about Amy Adams' character, because it's so easy to play the victim card. And sometimes we are just a victim. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But if you make mistakes and your mistakes are made because you were just too weak to say something or to do something, own it. And I love that about this film and about that character and how she's able to, kind of win the day because of it. To me, I was really, really intrigued by that. And I was very engulfed by that idea. So I really like this. I'm with you. Easily one of my favorite Burton films I've seen, at least since Big Fish, probably at least in a decade. So one I would recommend. But anyway, I have more thoughts on this on Letterboxd, even though Brendan pretty much read it in his initial thoughts. but you can go check that out on our Letterboxd page at letterboxd.com/incessionfilm.
By the way, I didn't hear you. I don't think you gave a grade.
Oh, I would give it maybe an A. I mean, I really liked it quite a bit. And sorry if I'm kind of spoiling some of this. I know some of my words could feel spoilery, but we've talked a lot about biopics before and how you can, it's out there. It's information that's known. I apologize though if I went overboard with that, but I couldn't help myself. I was excited.
I don't think you did. And like I said, I think a good biopic, I think for a biopic to work, it has to work dramatically, even if you do know the story inside and out.
I agree.
That's how I sometimes test a biopic. I make sure I know the story, and if it works dramatically, then the movie succeeds. And I think in this case, it still would have succeeded.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think that by watching it, maybe even watching the trailer, you're going to get a sense of where it's going to go anyway. For those, if I did spoil it for you, I apologize in advance.
Don't apologize. I no one out there, do not accept his apology, because it's not needed. Okay. It's a biopic. It's a biopic.
That's
it's
true.
Known.
It's true.
Now if this were something else, like if let's say you're talking about Interstellar or something like that, I'd say shut the hell up.
Exactly. Very good.
All right, but yes, if you agree or disagree with our takes on Big Eyes, you can let us know by leaving a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/incessionfilm or tweet us at incessionfilm. You can also leave us a comment on our Google Plus page, or you can email us at incessionfilm@gmail.com.
All right, coming up next, we're going to be talking about Marky Mark and The Gambler. although the film is stolen by someone else that I can't wait to talk about. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
For that child that went away. I've carried all my sorrow to my best place.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast Extra Film segment. Hey, Brendan, tell me once again, what's life driven by?
Life is driven by one thing. F*** you.
You drink? I don't remember if you drink. Of course, there's drink and drink. I drink, but I haven't been drunk since Reagan was president. I got a DUI and in jail, I actually fell down and pissed my pants. You don't need to do that twice. I tell you this so you'll know everybody's been there.
Everybody's been there.
Once. You're there twice. I can't help you. Which leads me to ask, are you pulling this just now or forever?
What's the difference?
I need to know if you got the brains to walk when it's time to walk. I've seen you be $500,000 up.
I've been up $2.5 million.
You still owe large two places you shouldn't. Why do you want door number three?
How else do I get out?
If I give you this money and you don't pay me back, there are no rules. Do you understand the gravity of your situation?
I understand.
All right, The Gambler is directed by Rupert Wyatt and stars Mark Wahlberg, John Goodman, sort of Brie Larson. Don't get me started on that yet, Brendan. But I'll toss it to you first, man. Are we going to agree on The Gambler?
In many ways, I hope not, because I think it's fun when we don't agree. But at the trend that we've been having, something tells me we've got some similar things to say about this one, just knowing our track record.
Okay.
First thing I will say is that I think it's worth mentioning that, is this technically a remake?
I don't know. I don't know, honestly.
Well, because, I mean, this movie is it is based on a movie from 1974 called The Gambler that starred James Caan.
Sure. I think that it is, actually, now that you mentioned that. I think I read that somewhere, or maybe I even heard it in an interview with Mark Wahlberg. I think that it is, now that you say that. But I could be wrong, but
yeah.
I think that may be the case.
Yeah, I don't know if it is officially or not, but I just feel like if it is, then it's probably worth kind of mentioning. I haven't seen that film with James Caan.
Sure.
But if anyone out there has, just kind of be like on the lookout. If you're looking forward to this movie, the names aren't just similar they're similar because it is the same movie, essentially.
Yeah. According to IMDb, it is a remake of that original film.
Okay. Okay. Well, then that answers that question. Thank God IMDb exists. I never heard of it.
Yeah. Exactly.
I don't know how to phrase it for this movie, but this is one of those movies, the second that the movie ended, I was just left scratching my head, kind of thinking, everything about this movie just felt so phony. And I mean that in a way that nothing felt natural, nothing felt believable, and worst of all, nothing felt earned. This is one of those cases where I did not buy into a single second of it. Mark Wahlberg plays this literature professor who I think is probably represents, I think, one of the worst professors I've ever seen ever. This movie kind of reminded me a lot of a little bit of the movie Inside Llewyn Davis by the Coen brothers last year, where essentially it follows a character who's kind of either obsessed or kind of like focused on a desire to do something, in that case being folk music, but it presented the central character as kind of a despicable human being. But unlike Inside Llewyn Davis, you feel, at least I did not feel any pity for the Mark Wahlberg character in this movie, which makes the way this movie goes feel absolutely unearning of where they thought it need to go. I mean, I think this comes down to a script by William Monahan, or at least an adapted script here, that probably looked really good on paper. It has some nice dialogue. Yeah. I think there's a lot of quotable lines in it. I think John Goodman's actually good in the movie. I mean, he's good in almost anything he does. You give him a bunch of swear words, he's going to be entertaining to watch. But I feel like Rupert Wyatt here just didn't really understand the emotional core of this story, or he wanted to take it somewhere where I personally think it shouldn't have gone. Here's a good example of it. I think in the very beginning of this movie is Mark Wahlberg standing at the deathbed of his grandfather. And it's meant to be like an emotional kind of heartbreaking scene.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'm sitting there thinking after the movie ended, I would be willing to bet money that was the last shot of the movie they filmed, and they filmed it at the last minute to try and make a sympathetic character out of Mark Wahlberg because they realized how much of a jerk he was the entire movie. I really think that was the case, and it made everything about the movie just even feel that much more unearning, because this is just a despicable human being throughout, and I did not care for him at all, and it made me just bored with the movie. And like you even said, don't get me started on Brie Larson and how much her character is wasted in this movie.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Doesn't add anything. And I love Brie Larson.
Me too. I love her. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's technically fine here, but her character does
nothing
here.
Nothing.
There's nothing. It's just thrown in there for sex appeal. And it's also one of his students, which is just, pardon my French, it's f-ing weird. I mean, sure. I don't know. It just, nothing felt natural or believable or well earned for me. I mean, in many ways, this is just a stupid movie.
Well, the first thing I got to say is, for those listening, okay, and especially if you just listened to our review of Big Eyes, between these two segments, okay, during the break, during the music, Brendan and I were sitting here talking, and he said, I asked him, are we going to agree on The Gambler? Your response to me was, well, I haven't read your review on Letterboxd yet, so I don't know. That was what you told me during the music break. Okay?
That is what I told you. Yes. Yes.
Here is what I have written down on Letterboxd. And this is exactly what you said. This movie had potential and probably worked on paper. I wrote that down verbatim. I also wrote down, the biggest miss of the movie was trying to get the audience to engage with a Llewyn Davis-like character. Wyatt wasn't able to find the right formula that the Coens did, and it ultimately just wasn't earned. That is exactly verbatim what I wrote down on Letterboxd. So either Brendan and I have this weird connection, or he lied to me. One of the two. I don't know what it is, but that's exactly what I had written down. So there you go.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
I will say, on top of that, what I'll add is, on Letterboxd, I did give it 3 out of 5 stars. But what I wrote was, John Goodman raises this to 3 stars for me. I'd like just 90 minutes of his character talking to me, because he stole the show. He was only in the film for like 2, maybe 3 scenes. But every time he was on screen, absolutely captivated me. If there's one thing that Rupert Wyatt did get right from Inside Llewyn Davis, is that he got the best use of John Goodman he possibly could have, except maybe put on some more clothes. That was a little disturbing. But when Goodman was on screen, though, when he was on screen, he was awesome. He was so fascinating. I loved his character.
I did too. And well, I mean, you gave the film 3 out of 5 stars, apparently.
Only because of him, though. Only because of him. And the fact that Brie Larson is in it. I mean, she doesn't do much, I agree, but I love watching her.
Yeah, she's still great to look at. She's really cute.
She is.
But then again, John Goodman's in the movie, like you said, for 2 scenes. It probably adds up to like maybe 15 minutes, and that's 3 out of 5 stars. Come on, man.
Yeah, he adds a whole nother star. He adds a whole nother star, at least. Maybe it's generous. It's generous, sure, yeah.
Yeah, but he's essentially, if you like what he did in a movie like The Big Lebowski, then you're gonna like what he does here. I mean, it's very similar to what he does there. It's not quite as comical as it was in The Big Lebowski, but he does portray a really, like, he's a badass in this movie, and he's creepily funny. And
yeah,
I love, but
I agree.
More funny than creepy. But it's like a Pulp Fiction or Tarantino-like character here, and they actually get that right. I felt like a lot of times this is – I don't know if this is something you mentioned in your Letterboxd review or not, but I felt like a lot of times either William Monahan or actually Rupert Wyatt trying to use this from the script was trying to create a Tarantino-esque movie here with that kind of crisp dialogue and kind of witty characters. But the only thing is that the characters weren't aside from John Goodman, none of the other characters were fun or fun to watch.
No.
And here's a perfect example of one of the biggest problems with this movie. This might be a bit of a spoiler, but to be honest, I don't think this movie's – I'm just going to say it right now. I don't think this movie's really that worth seeing, so I really don't care.
Sure.
There's a scene where he essentially gambles so much that he's got to owe a lot of money, and it amounts to like – I think like $250,000.
If you're talking about the Las Vegas scene, I have this written down in my notes or in my Letterboxd review.
I'm actually not.
Okay.
Okay, so we might have – oh, we got a difference here. We got a difference here.
Okay. No,
but here's a perfect example of the problem with the movie. He's got to owe up to $250,000 essentially, I think, or somewhere around there. But the way he goes about to get that money, he basically gets the help grudgingly from his mother, played by Jessica Lange.
Yes.
And there's a scene where
she
grudgingly kind of gives in to help
him. Yes.
And they go to the bank and walk out with the money. And you can kind of see that there's an estranged relationship there because she's so disappointed with him. And any child of any parent knows that if a parent just expresses that they're disappointed in you, even if you can tell it but without them saying it, that hurts so much more than them just being mad at you.
Yeah.
And she is like – she's heartbroken. She's breaking. Yeah. She's breaking down.
Yeah. The ending of that scene is absurd. It is so absurd.
It's absolutely absurd.
It's so absurd.
He basically just responds saying, I just want to take the money and leave. He doesn't even give a thank you to her. And she walks away heartbroken. He just walks away like it means nothing.
Yeah.
And the movie kind of
– And this is a guy trying to get out of a tough situation. It's his livelihood that's on the line. And she did not have to help him. She did not have to help him. And he basically just gives her a f*** you.
Yes, exactly. And it's a perfect example of what is exactly wrong with this movie. It tries to either make the Mark Wahlberg character either sympathetic in parts or just kind of an interesting character to watch, and none of those things are achieved at all. I mean, it's the exact opposite here. This is one of those movies where I just like I want to jump into this world, take a gun, and shoot him, and just walk away.
I agree, and that's exactly why nothing at the end of this film is earned, because we're building building on top of what is supposed to be a Llewyn Davis-like character. So when we get to the end of the film, it doesn't work. Because that's not what you were building this entire time. It sweeps the rug underneath you, and I just didn't buy it. It was absolutely ridiculous. I will say, I'll give the film credit that some of the drama was a little tense, but it was so manufactured, and it was almost laughable. And especially how Brie Larson's character plays into the end, it was offensive to me. It was offensive the way that was handled. I walked out of the theater pissed. Like, I was like, that's just stupid.
I cannot blame you, and I completely agree with that. I mean, offensive might be a fine word, especially with how despicable this human being is.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to spoil the end of what happens, just because we know we probably have some people that really do want to see this movie.
Sure.
But what is this movie trying to promote at the end? I mean, this is essentially a guy who is in the biggest shitstorm because he gambles too much. So we get to this dramatic point at the end. What is it trying? I feel like it's still trying to promote something that I felt like the whole time it was not trying to promote. So it becomes this huge hypocritical theme.
Exactly.
And the whole thing is just from a thematic and drama standpoint, the movie's a mess.
I agree. Mess. The right word that you said was hypocritical. That's exactly the right word with this film thematically, because the film, I guess, is trying to say something about addiction and how that can play a part of our lives and get us into these crazy situations. But the way that Mark Wahlberg's character handles addiction and his almost ignorance to his own addiction, but then the way that his situation crystallizes, none of that made sense. It absolutely was hypocritical on so many different levels. It just didn't make any sense to me. Going back to another scene I want to talk about real fast before final thoughts. You know, when you were talking about how the mother scene just didn't work for me as far as where the film was going after that, another scene that added on top of that, again, wasting Brie Larson's character, was when they go to Vegas, as I was kind of bringing up earlier. Now, this was right after he gets that money from his mom, right? Now, we find out that at one point, Wahlberg's character was up $2.5 million, presumably from gambling. We don't know that, but you kind of assume that the way that he acts and carries himself, he's been gambling for a long time. He knows what he's doing. So you presume that he was up from gambling. And I'm going to spoil this, so I'm sorry, but I have to because I got to talk about it. So he gets this $250,000 and he loses all of it. Every single cent in one sitting. Now, if you're going to tell me that this guy is a guy that carries himself because he gambles so much, he knows what he's doing, and we've seen he's pretty good in a lot of instances. We saw that throughout the film. And he was up $2.5 million from gambling, but when he has $250,000, you're telling me he can't earn not even a penny after that? I didn't buy that at all. It was nonsense to me. Completely took me out of the film and only added to the chaos of where this film was going when it crystallized for me.
Yeah, it was a complete mess. It really was so poorly handled. And you're right. It made absolutely no sense. I completely agree.
All right. Well, this film doesn't need to go any further in our discussion. So, any other final thoughts? And what grade would you give The Gambler?
Just a few quick things. You mentioned about some of the tension being very manufactured, and I completely agree. The tension's almost cheap in this movie.
Yeah.
Because you can make tension it's just natural tension. If you understand card games and you like card games,
yeah,
the flipping of a card and a blackjack table is always going to seem kind of tense. So sure. The whole movie, the tension is just cheap. I found it so cheap.
Yeah.
It's like a cheap jump scare in a
exactly.
horror film.
That's exactly what I was going to say. That's the equivalent.
Yeah. The other thing I'll mention is that I think the soundtrack of this movie was incredibly distracting. It's mainly because they're kind of trying to do these like almost like reggae and soulful covers of a lot of there's like these reggae and soul covers of Pink Floyd songs in this movie. You have Money and Time played in this movie, and it was so distracting for some reason.
And it was how it was used, I think. I mean, if you listen to the music on its own, it's fine, but the way the Rupert White uses it, comes in at the wrong time, it cuts hard, and because of that it becomes this distracting. It just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I can see why he's playing it, because he wanted it to make it feel natural, like it's coming from his car or something.
Sure.
But when that hard cut comes, and when it's introduced, it comes at a time that it kills whatever drama is happening on the film on the screen.
It really does. It absolutely does. And I don't really understand what the purpose of some of those songs were. I felt like they played Money by Pink Floyd here only because the song talks about money.
Yeah.
I mean, but it was also very distracting for me because there was a version of that song Money in The Italian Job, also starring Marky Mark. So it just started reminding me of how much I like that film. And that's not even that great of a film. It's an enjoyable film. But the fact I had to look to a film like that to be reminded of how good that was compared to this is saying something here. And the last thing I will say, I talked about it briefly, but the very first scene in this movie on, the deathbed of his grandfather. Now, I mentioned that I think that was really the last scene they filmed because they were just trying to make a sympathetic character out of him here. And it was like just a last minute thing. It's so not earned. It's so random. And it doesn't even add anything to the story. It doesn't give anything about who the character was, or maybe if that was meant to, allude to why he's such a gambler. It gives you nothing. There's no purpose for
it. They reference him one other time, and it means nothing. Yeah, it makes no sense. Yeah.
And that's the case of this movie. From a plot standpoint, the movie's not confusing, but the movie itself, for what it's trying to say, makes absolutely no sense. And not because it's like so intellectual that I didn't get it. No,
sure.
The movie just didn't make sense because it had no coherent thought into what the movie should have been about. And that's a damn shame, because I think Rupert Wyatt has proven himself to be a solid director. At the very least, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I mean,
really
that
good.
Was Very good movie. Yeah. Huge surprise. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this, I mean, you mentioned something about him missing the mark here. I think that's an understatement. As much as I agree with you that John Goodman was great and he may have risen this to 3 out of 5 stars for you, for me, this is still one of the worst films of the year. I give this a D.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty much in your camp through a lot of this. I mean, if you were to tell me on paper that there's a professor in this film, a college professor, that struggles as an intellect and as a teacher and wants to get more out of his students in a unique way, but he's this gambler, he's got this other life, on paper, I find it compelling. And I like Mark Wahlberg as an actor. I feel like in theory, this should work. And it just doesn't. It becomes this nonsensical, overly done, just mess of a film that to me just came off as laughable, especially when you add in the way that they handle college basketball in this movie. Oh my goodness. I mean, there's a difference between using kind of generic teams and generic kind of basketball or sports kind of stuff in a movie, and this just takes it to a degree that I don't even want to get started on. It's absurd.
And I just want to say that those listening out there, this is coming from someone that lives in Lexington, Kentucky, the home of college basketball. Yeah. So take his word for it. I lived in Lexington as well.
Yeah.
Take our word for it. It's laughable with how they represent college basketball. And it's so ironic, too, that the team are called the Wildcats.
Exactly. Exactly. It's not the Kentucky Wildcats. I will guarantee that. But this film is just ridiculous. And the fact that they wasted Brie Larson just was almost – I wanted to cry when I got home. I was so sad.
It was insulting.
Yeah,
it was
absolutely. So, yeah, this I could not recommend. And even though in my Letterboxd review I said that it raises it 3 stars for me, and I really do like John Goodman in this film. I think his character is really hilarious and fascinating. I agree with you. I would give this probably a D+. If I want to do the same thing for this, maybe he raises it to a C- or a C. But really, this is a D movie. It's a terrible film and one I wouldn't recommend. So, anyway, if you do want to read more of my thoughts, go check us out on Letterboxd, letterboxd.com/InSessionFilm.
And again, we'd love your feedback. So if you have seen this movie and you actually liked it, please come talk to us. We'll be glad to knock some sense into you.
I would love to hear your argument for it. I would be, in all seriousness, I would be really fascinated to hear it.
Yes, I would too. I mean, you won't sway my opinion, but I'd be very curious.
Yeah, I would be too, yeah.
But if so, leave us a comment on our website at InSessionFilm.com, or you can hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. We'd love to hear your thoughts if you hated this movie too. I mean, we'd love to talk. Absolutely. We'd love to talk the hatred here because that's something that's always fun as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Love to hear your thoughts either way. But anyway, that should do it for this week's show. Once again, just a reminder, as Brennan just alluded to, follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Also, you can find our main shows not only on our website and on Stitcher and iTunes, but you can find them on YouTube as well. So if you go to youtube.com/InSessionFilm, you'll find a bunch of videos there, including our main shows that you can hear every week on our YouTube page.
Always good, yeah. And you can also subscribe to us on iTunes to hear all of our main podcasts as well as these extra film reviews. And while you're on iTunes, you can leave us a comment and a review there. We'd appreciate some feedback on that medium as well. Also, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter, which you can do on Facebook by clicking the newsletter tab or on our website at InSessionFilm.com/newsletter.
And the In Session Film podcast is supported by our super awesome listeners like you. If you want to help support us, just go to our website at InSessionFilm.com. Click on our bonus content tab in our main menu, and you can hear our fun bonus content for just a small donation of 99 cents. And our latest bonus content for episode 98 is now up, Nerdin' Out with DJ Valentine Volume 2, where he educates everybody on Black Panther and Marvel. It was a really, really fun bonus content, so definitely go and check that out. You can also help us out by going to the In Session Film store, or just go to InSessionFilm.com/donate, and you'll see a bunch of information there on how you can help us out. One thing I would recommend is you can hear everything we do, whether it's these extra film shows, our main podcasts, or our bonus content, all on our mobile app for just a one-time fee of $1.99. And you can find that app on the Amazon market for Android devices, the Windows 8 phone store for Windows devices, and the podcast box app for iOS devices. including my new iPhone 6 iOS. Anyway, you can see all those details on the site at incessionfilm.com/apps. As for the main show this weekend on episode 99, as I talked about in the opening, we're going to be doing the Incession Film Awards and our top 10 of 2014. I have some more work to do, I'll just say, before we get ready for that show, but I'm very, very close to having everything nailed down. I'm really excited for the show this weekend, Brendan.
I am too. What a year it has been, I'll tell you. And I still think some of your categories, I have to cheat a bit because there's absolutely no way I can do it.
It's hard. Yeah.
I'll try my best though. It'll be fun. It'll be fun.
It's gonna be fun. Yeah. Also, go vote on this week's poll as it goes directly into our top 10. We're simply asking, what's the best movie of 2014? The options we threw out was Birdman, Whiplash, Boyhood, The Grand Budapest Hotel, Gone Girl, Interstellar, Under the Skin, or Lock, or you can just write in your own option, which we've had plenty of write-in options by this point. So definitely go and vote. We'll talk about it as well as our own top 10 of 2014. So that should be a really fun show. And also, as I mentioned in the opening, stay tuned for episode 100 the following week. We're going to have a fun surprise and some pretty awesome guests. So be sure to be on the lookout for that. And also, I mentioned this in the opening, next week's extra film, Inherent Vice, Paul Thomas Anderson, and also Selma, which is getting a ton of amazing reviews right now. So I look forward to both of that. Before we get out of here, Brendan, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised about the reviews for Selma because I still think that was one of the worst trailers of the year.
Yeah. I remember you hating that.
They played hip-hop music during it.
They did.
Why?
Well, I don't want to get into that. That I think could lead down to dangerous territory. So,
Good point. I could not have said anything. Instead, I will say this: if anyone out there votes on our poll and puts the gambler on there, I'm gonna come and beat you up.
There you go. Well, I'm sure we're gonna hear True Romance throw in their vote for the gambler because they do disagree with us all the time. So, anyway, as far as final thoughts for me, go see Inherent Vice. I'm not going to give away any thoughts. I'm just going to say, go see it. I can't wait to talk about it. So definitely go and do all of that. Join us this weekend in Session Film Awards. If you want to listen to last year's awards, if you want to listen to our thoughts on 2013, go check out episode 46. There you'll be able to find our awards from last year and our top 10 of 2013. So you'll get an idea of what this weekend show is going to be like. So anyway, that should do it. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you guys next time on the Incession Film Podcast Extra Film segment.